morning, we have as our first oral argument, 12 AP 2521, Frederick Priestler versus Kettles Septic Service. And we have a long lineup of speakers for varied times. And so I'll go through it and see if we've got agreement. We've got 15 minutes for Attorney Olson representing the Priestlers. We've got 10 minutes for Michael, is it Mangini, representing Kettle. We've got 10 minutes for Christine Rice, representing Rural. We've got 10 minutes for Jeffrey Evans, representing Regent. We have 5 minutes for Attorney Graff, representing Hastings. We have 5 minutes for Attorney Kobach, representing Sakura. And we have 5 minutes for Attorney Smies or Smies? Smies, representing Phil's pumpkin. Okay? Your red and orange lights will go on faster than you can see them on some of these. Okay. Attorney Olson, representing the Priestlers here.
May it please the court, I'm Jim Olson of Lawton and Cates, and I represent Fred and Tina Chrysler. Dairy farmers in Hortonville. They've been operating a family farm for many years. Fred grew up on it, and he's been farming for many, many years. This case involves damage and death of cattle on the farm, but the issue before this court is the pollution exclusion. And in the many years that the court has addressed the pollution exclusion, I think there are a few factors which seem to be important as I review their decisions. One of the important issues is the substance that is involved that causes the injury. And the second is the context in which this exposure occurs, whether the exposure is in the context of a common everyday occurrence that's gone awry, or whether the context which the substance causes the injury.
Counsel, I think you're about to get into the definition of septage and how it was used in this case. And before you do that,
sure,
and before the rest of my colleagues start asking questions, I want to ask you...
Let me ask one first.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Okay. I get it.
All of our jokes get funnier once we put the black robe on.
At least to each other.
Not to us.
Anyway, my question is this. I can't remember. When I was reading the briefs, and preparing for this case, I don't remember the answer to this question. It's not a huge question, but did your clients pay? What was the arrangement between them and the Kettles as far as whether it was a payment or whether it was considered a favor or what?
Well, they did not pay for it. It was that's the answer to your question. The Kettles were across the street, and my client, of course, needed fertilizer for his property.
Sure, and the incentive to distribute it for free would probably come from the fact otherwise they'd have to take it to a waste disposal center where it would actually cost them money to get rid of it.
Yeah, and on the other hand, if it my client did not get the septage or get the fertilizer from them, he would have to go out and buy it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Does it matter? In the case,
so.
Whether they paid for it or as a favor or anything else?
I don't think it does.
Who writes the opinion?
Pardon me?
I don't think it does.
Okay. We'll ask everyone else that, too. Thank you.
Okay. Now I'm getting into the factors which I said involved the pollution exclusion and the context. And I say there's two contexts. One is it a common, ordinary occurrence gone awry. Secondly, was the context one where it was a unique undesirable substance which causes harm.
What's the occurrence?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What is the occurrence? Is it the spreading of the manure, or the cows eating it, or it being available to the cows?
The occurrence, Your Honor, I would say, would be the cows drinking the water that had the nitrates in it.
So the occurrence is its seepage into the well, and then the cows getting it.
And then the overproduction of nitrates.
Yes. The overproduction, yeah, that's correct. All right. If it's a common ordinary occurrence, the cases which where it is held that the pollution exclusion does not apply, the Donaldson case and the Langoni case. In both of those situations, there was in one case carbon dioxide, the other carbon monoxide, which was people are accustomed to being around all the time. The problem with those cases was that there was an oversupply in the air causing, in the case of Donaldson, illnesses for the people in the building, in the case of Langoni, even death due to carbon monoxide.
Your opposing counsel points out that that's just a natural incident of life, and there's nothing to do to prevent that, obviously, consistent with the health of the occupants of the building. People breathe in, they're going to breathe out, whereas here it was a deliberate activity. Can you address why that is an important distinction or why it is not?
Well, I think it's I don't think it's an important distinction. The here the manure was placed on the land. It was intended to be placed on the land.
You're saying manure, but this is septage, right?
Well, it's being used as fertilizer. Well,
but septage consists, in addition to human waste, it consists of the used water from car washes, the remnants of grease traps, and something else that's not readily...
Well, there might be other things.
Grease traps and the things from motor oil service stations. So we're not just talking about manure, right?
Well, but we're talking about manure as what is the problem that caused the death of the cattle and the injury to the cattle, because it is the nitrates. And the stuff from the grease traps, the other stuff, isn't a problem in this case. It was the nitrates.
I don't remember reading that in your brief. I remember reading that the definition of septage, and it was the application of septage that increases the nitrates and therefore the fertility of the soil, and it was the alleged over-application of the septage. My memory might be frail, but I think that this is the first time I've heard the distinction that we're just separating out the natural waste.
Well, what we are saying caused the problem were the nitrates in the water. The nitrates come from nitrogen that comes as part of the nitrogen cycle, which we went into in great detail. We don't say anything about grease traps, about grease, or any of that causing the nitrates. The only thing we say caused the nitrates was nitrogen, which has been around forever.
Sure, but I read it, and this might be a distinction without a difference. I'm not looking to provoke an argument. I read it as your clients were alleging that the application of septage, as opposed to, we have a case next after this which deals solely with the natural waste of cattle. So I read this case as including all of it. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, why would the farmers allow the application of this stuff if all of it wasn't somehow beneficial to the soil?
Well, because the soil will filter out, obviously, most of the material. The part that is the problem in this case are the nitrates.
And that comes only from?
That comes only from the manure, the fecal material.
We're talking about human waste.
You're right, right.
Okay.
And as far as, to make this case similar to the Donaldson case and the Langoni case, nitrates are ubiquitous in the water. They're there all the time, just like carbon dioxide is ubiquitous, and carbon monoxide is ubiquitous. It's only when there is an oversupply of it that it becomes a problem. Now, in the Peace case and in the Hirshhorn case, we had a different situation. We had substances in those cases which were known to be unique, undesirable, and harmful. They had no business being where they were. In this case, the septage, manure, fertilizer had been applied to the field and was intended to be applied to the field. And it was being used, it has been used since the beginning of time to help grow crops. This is, and the nitrates were there all the time. Now, to determine whether this case is like Donaldson and Langoni or like Peace and Hirshhorn, you really have to look at the facts. And the facts in this case were presented primarily, almost entirely, by the plaintiffs. And that was through Dr. Barak, who's a soil scientist, and Dr. Beatty, who is in dairy herd management. And it's undisputed that what we say caused the problem was an oversupply of nitrates, which came from the septage. Now, we have to look at we have to look at the language of the insurance policy, the definition of a pollutant, because that's crucial. And the definition of the pollutant, the defendants zero in on the word waste. Now, the word waste, we say, is not related, because the septage that was applied was a valuable, important product. It wasn't waste. Waste is something that in the Hirshhorn case, the court indicated one of the definitions of waste was something that's useless. The septage was not useless.
Counselor, I have something that kind of bothered me about this case, and maybe you can help me. If I agree with you that what they put on the surface of the soil was fertilizer and applied to be a benefit to the soil to grow crops in, does that argument square up with another allegation here, which is that some of these septage tanks leaked? So, and it would be a fact question as to whether or not the damage was caused by the spreading on the top or the leak out of the bottom of the tank, because you'd have to prove a leak, but I understand that that's an allegation here. And to me, I can understand your argument about spreading it on the top, but if it leaked out of the tank, to me it seems sort of like gas tanks from a gasoline station that sometimes leak, and when they leak, they're always a pollutant when they hit groundwater. Do you see what's bothering me about that? I mean, the definition of pollutant, is it consistent? Is it the same if you're looking at spreading it as fertilizer, as the definition would be if what happened here was a leak out of the bottom of the tank?
Well, I think it's a different case between it being a leak and being spread.
Well, there's an allegation here.
Oh, I know. Okay. There's an allegation.
And it's a fact question as to...
Sure, it's a fact question, right, and right. The fact question will be, you know, be determined when we go to trial on this matter.
Right.
But the still, you know, if it's a leak from the tag, we still have it going to nitrates in the groundwater.
True, but it wasn't put on the ground in an effort to do something beneficial to the ground, you know. And
it was being held. It was being held in the tank.
Yeah, but it leaked out. If it leaked out, to me it feels like leaking out from a, you know, underground gas tank.
Yeah,
tank, you know?
It's a harder case.
Yeah.
I will agree. Okay. It's a harder case if the damage caused here was from a leak
in the
tank,
okay,
rather than the intentional spreading of it on the land.
Okay, so then to some degree, you sort of see a dichotomy in how you define pollutant. Because you're saying it's not a pollutant when we're spreading it on the ground. We're spreading it as fertilizer. It's been done forever and ever in farm fields. But you say it's a harder case to say it's not a pollutant when it leaks out of the tank. So the definition of pollutant could vary, couldn't it?
I would say so.
Okay, thank you.
Well, does the policy exclude intentional acts? You said spreading this manure is an intentional act. True, but it's negligence in the sense that...
They overspread it.
Pardon me?
That they overspread it.
That they overspread, and it's negligent because what they overspread becomes the toxic. When it leaks, if it's an intentional leak, you might exclude it because it's an intentional act. But it's negligent because you haven't sealed those tanks properly or haven't looked at the tanks to make them sealed. But what you still have done negligently is spread a toxic, that is too much nitrate. So I don't know if it's different, and you have to be careful that you don't confuse the negligence or intentional, the act, with are you getting it out? I assume in these they're all in effect negligent rather than intentional, and that you're defining pollutant. That's where you're coming out on this case on insurance policy.
Certainly, and light has turned to red, and I just have one more thing, and that is
very quickly,
if the insurance companies had wanted to exclude this product, it would have been very easy. They could have said excluded manure or fertilizer, put that in the definition of pollutant, and then it would have been clear.
Okay, counsel. Mr. Mahaney.
Hey, please, the court. My name is Mike Mangini from the Hurling Clark Law Firm. I represent Kettle Septic Service LLC, 4DK Farm LLC, Cheryl Kettle, Duke Kettle, Dale Kettle, and Doug Kettle. My clients run a septic company. They also are farmers for the 4DK Farm LLC. They use the same septage that they applied to the Chrysler's farm field on their own farm fields. They spread septage as well as collect it and haul it as their as part of their central business practice in Kettle Septic.
That true of 4DK, they spread as well as use?
Right, they put it on their own. No, well, 4DK Farms doesn't apply the septage, but they Kettle Septic would apply it to the 4DK Farm land, which is owned by the same individuals who own Kettle Septic.
Okay, but they 4DK doesn't spread on other people's lands?
No.
Okay. Is that the only difference among the defendants? And I know some of the defendants are individuals, some are the corporation.
Correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
In looking at the issue of whether septage is unambiguously a pollutant given the definition in these policies, the courts have given us three main things we have to look at. Number one, the court in Hirshhorn acknowledged that the primary inquiry is whether a reasonable person in the position of the insured would understand the substance to be a pollution, to be pollution. Second, as the court in Falk noted, as part of the inquiry, we must look at the context or environment in which the substance is being used. Third, as the court in Donaldson noted, there is a question of whether the alleged injuries resulted from an everyday condition gone slightly but not surprisingly awry. In looking at the reasonable position of the insured, or a reasonable person in the insured's shoes. In this case, you're looking at a septic company, two septic companies, who apply septage to farmland as a nutrient. This is part of their normal, everyday business operations. This is an intended activity. It's intended for the benefit of farmland. It's specifically providing nutrients to farmland.
Sure, and that goes to one claim. But one of the topics that I want to get at, that the Chief Justice in her questioning kind of tangentially got to, was the claim in regard to the alleged leaking storage tank. Now, does this court need to look at those two occurrences as discrete I would not call leaking from a storage tank without further evidence an intentional act. I don't think the record indicates any intent here. But do we need to look at it? Do we need to look at these two things, these two occurrences, as discrete occurrences? And if we do, how is the claim in regard to the storage tank not precluded by the limited liability part of the policy issued by Secura?
As far as...
which covers damages arising from actions taking place on the farm and on the farm only.
Right. Well, as far as the tank goes, I think for purposes of coverage, if you find coverage for one claim, you find them for all. So I don't think that's critical here until you actually make a determination down the road. And I think there's issues of fact that need to be addressed. I do think that you still have to look at the leaking in terms of, is it a normal condition, an everyday condition that has gone slightly but not surprisingly awry? And if you look at what the septic company does in this case, that's a normal everyday condition. And if you have to look at context and you look at septage in the context of this case, it was being normally used. This was a normal everyday condition for the insurance, for the septic companies. This is what they did.
I don't think that's his question. I think his question is more like the question I asked opposing counsel. If we look at a claim that the storage tank is leaking, then is that claim, because the leak would occur on the property of the kettles, okay, is that excluded by the limited liability portion of the policy?
That is right.
So it's a different question than you were answering. A hard question.
Well, I think that's a question of fact, and I think that there's an expert in this case that testified, I think it's the plaintiff's expert who testified that there's no evidence to show that the damage took place on that property. So I think that's something that has to be determined by the trial court. The trial court never determined it. But I think the limited liability exclusion, I think it's a tougher question. I don't know the answer to that for sure.
Did you raise this issue at the Court of Appeals?
I did not raise the issue.
And did you raise it in this court?
I did not.
Why shouldn't we deem your argument on that forfeited?
Because the trial court never addressed it, and I think it's an issue of fact that needs to be addressed by the trial court.
I think it's a question of fact about where the pollutant came from. Did it all come from spreading it fertilizer on top, and or did it all come from a leak, or was there a combination? Those are facts, but I think it's a matter of law of whether or not, if there were a leak that was involved here, it is or is not excluded by the limited liability, because the leak is going to occur on the property of the insured. Now, maybe you don't see it that way, but I frankly think that's a question of law that we're asking you to help us with.
Right. And I don't think the exclusion would apply in that circumstance.
I want you to finish your answer, then I have a question, but I don't want to interrupt you.
No.
Okay, you're finished.
Yes.
I want to go back to what I consider your analytical framework. You started with regard to what would a reasonable insured think was a pollutant. That was your first one. I'm paraphrasing in your three-prong of analysis. My question focuses not on a leak, but on a leach, okay? And by that I mean, from what perspective do we focus on when we ask whether or not a reasonable insured would think it's a pollutant? When it is spread, or when it leaches into the water? When does it become a pollutant? I ask that question, when do we focus on? In light of the Peace case, the lead paint case, which indicated in part that we don't focus on the paint the lead that's in the paint, but rather it becomes a pollutant when it disperses into chips. So it's not a pollutant when it's in paint. So with that, by way of context, can you tell me, should the focus be on when the pollutant is a byproduct as it leaches into the water, or whether it was a pollutant when it is placed on the land? Because I think that may be outcome determinative.
I think first off we have to note that septage never leached into the well water. Septage didn't penetrate it. Septage stayed right where...
The nitrates allegedly did, right?
Nitrates were created by the scientific process through the nitrogen cycle, but there's only low levels of nitrates in the septage. I also look at, if you look at Langoni, do we look at carbon monoxide poisoning, or are we looking at the fire and the burner that caused the flue reversal? No, we're not looking at those. We're looking at carbon monoxide, the poisoning. In this case, that's why we raised the issue of you have to look at the nitrates. And at the level of nitrates, nitrates at low levels are in our drinking water every day.
Okay, fair enough. Do we look at the nitrates when they are placed on the land or when the nitrates leach into the water? Where do we focus? Where are we saying, oh, is this, would a reasonable insured think it's a pollutant? Well, when?
What's difficult here is nitrates aren't placed on the land. They're created through the scientific process. So I think that's where it becomes difficult. But I think you have to look at them in terms of nitrates being on the land and then leaching. And I think that's where you go to, just like we did in Langoni and in Donaldson, that is it an everyday condition that's gone slightly but not surprisingly awry.
Aren't E. coli involved here? Aren't E. coli involved
that's
here?
That's the other case.
Not in your case. I'm aware of. Mm-hmm.
Could I ask a question? You have a rather elegant sentence in your brief. The application of septage and manure to cropland has been a practice used by farmers as a source of fertilizer since the dawn of agriculture. This cannot be the first case involving damage to a well or drinking water as a result of this practice. What's been the experience in the past in terms of the pollution exclusion clause?
I have the red light, so I'll try to answer your question.
You should.
To the extent of my research, I don't know if it's taken place in Wisconsin, if there's been issues on case law on point, and that these are maybe the first two cases specifically addressing this issue. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, the pollution exclusion clause is national, I believe. What about other states?
Well, in other states, I think it's a little bit different because they're not looking at this case specifically that came from pipe fitters, that we have to look at a normal everyday condition that may have gone slightly but not surprisingly awry. I don't think there's any case law outside of Wisconsin that addresses, you know, that question. And I think that becomes really important in this case. But the cases are back and forth depending on whether or not what trends they're following, what the history of the exclusion in that case, and whether or not they're only going to be applying it in industrial cases or otherwise. And there's cases, there's states that go all over the board on this, I think.
Okay. There are permits or applications for the spread of septage. Who obtains those? For example, when the septage was put on the Chrysler's land, who has to obtain a permit?
My understanding is Kettle Septic. I think it's the individual or the company that's applying the septage. So if a farmer is doing it themselves, applying their own manure, they would get the permit. If Kettle Septic is doing it on somebody else's farmland, I believe they may get the permit.
Is there any obligation that the party applying it or supplying it has to have insurance?
I don't know that answer off the top of my head, but I'm not quite certain. I don't know if there's regulations in the administrative code or in the statutes that require a company or a farmer, if he's doing it individually, to have insurance before he applies, let's say, his own manure, his cow's own manure to his farm. I'm not sure.
Okay. Now, here's a loaded question. The permits or applications that have to be completed, Are those not a result of a concern about non-point source pollution?
I'm sure. I don't know the answer for certain, but I'm guessing that's probably correct. But at the same time, they're allowing, it's specifically allowed. The DNR, in my understanding, Kettle Septic to this day is in good graces with the DNR, and they work hand-in-hand with the DNR on applying this. So even though there's regulations in place, it doesn't mean it's pollution. If it was pollution at its most basic level, the DNR would never let them apply it to farmland.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Evans, representing, I'm sorry, Ms. Rice.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Christine Rice. I represent Rural Mutual Insurance Company. Rural Insured Phil's Pumping and Fab, one of the septage handlers in this case. The respondents to this appeal have divided the time allocated. While we are all prepared to answer any questions you may have during this oral argument, we thought it proper or appropriate to bring a different focus to avoid repetition of argument to the best we could. I will be speaking to you today about the standard of interpretation that should apply to this insurance coverage analysis and the clarification we are requesting from this court in this appeal. Particularly, we request that the court clarify and reinforce that the reasonable insured standard means that the policy must be interpreted by a layperson, a person of ordinary intelligence, an average person, what they would understand the words to mean, not as to how a particular insured would understand those words to mean, or a particular insured's business or industry. We believe that the standard for interpreting the pollution exclusions at issue is and has been that the policy language is to be interpreted according to its plain and ordinary meaning, or as the standard has been phrased, in peace, as understood by a reasonable insured, or as in Donaldson and Hirschhorn, as understood by a reasonable person in the position of the insured. We feel this standard, albeit stated correctly in this court's prior precedent, has been stretched, if you will, by the petitioners in this case and by the Court of Appeals in the next pollution case that will be of discussion today.
Presumably, when you're a client issued the policy to Phil's Pumping, they might have been on notice of what kind of business Phil's Pumping was engaged in. And so I'm assuming they knew exactly what Phil's Pumping did, in my experience with the insurance companies. So why shouldn't it be? Why shouldn't it be from the perspective of the reasonable insured here, Phil's Pumping, who says, look, we apply a substance that is beneficial to the farmer and to the soil, and we don't view it as a pollutant in our use of it. Why is that unreasonable?
I'd like to answer your question, I guess, in two parts. The first part as to what Rural might have been thinking in the underwriting process during issuing this policy. The policy that Rural was providing was a commercial general liability policy, a policy that excluded pollution. While Rural may have had knowledge that septage was the nature of the insured's business, that doesn't change the fact that it's a commercial general liability.
I agree with you on the pollutants, but I compare that to the relevant section of the Secura policy, which excludes coverage for petroleum substances or derivatives, fertilizers, fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides. And I look at the language from your client's policy, and I see no such thing.
And that is partly because the rural policy was issued with an ISO standard form.
I'm sorry, what?
And that's particularly because the policy from rural was issued with an ISO standard form. It's not altered. But getting back to the Peace Court, pollution exclusions may be broad. If we were to include every substance that our clients may come in contact with, I believe they said something akin to it would be a federal procurement rather than an insurance policy. And policy exclusions generally are interpreted to have broad application.
Counsel,
you started out talking about it's the reasonable person, not the reasonable insured. And you cited Hirshhorn, and you cited Peace, and you cited, I think, Donaldson. But all three of those cases, of course, look at the reasonable insured, the language from Hirshhorn. To that end, we interpret policy language according to its plain and ordinary meaning as understood by a reasonable person in the position of the insured. Is that in the position of the insured merely surplusage?
I believe it's just a different phrase.
Okay.
A reasonable insured or a reasonable person in the position of the insured.
And Donaldson, what did I write? Instead, we agree with Judge Anderson's dissent that the pollution exclusion clause does not plainly and clearly alert a reasonable insured. You're saying that when that was written, the court really meant to say a reasonable person rather than a reasonable insured. Is that your response?
Correct.
And then with regard to Peace, the same thing. Based on the terms of the insurance policy at issue and the reasonable expectations of an insured property owner in 1998, we conclude that lead present in paint in a residence is a pollutant. So when the court said reasonable expectations of an insured property owner in 1988, it just should have said, and the reasonable expectations of a reasonable person and not of a property owner in 1988.
Correct. I think that last sentence was more of a conclusion,
and
it was still analyzed by a layperson standard.
Mm-hmm. You would have us disregard the language in those three cases and just insert reasonable person. Is that correct?
Not necessarily disregard the language, because I think, at least we believe, that the standards that as set forth with the reasonable person or the reasonable person in the insured in the position of the insured is an ordinary person or a layperson standard. And the problem with substituting farmer, or in this case septage handler, in for the insured is that it inherently brings the analysis from the perspective of the particular insured. And that's where the danger and the threat comes in with inconsistency in application. And inconsistency in application isn't beneficial in writing policies, interpreting them, or for those buying them.
Wouldn't that be a parallel to the idea that the same substance can be viewed in a different, as you say, perspective, depending on the context? In other words, if I'm hosting a dinner party, as I did last Sunday night, and someone brought a bucket of septage into my living room, I would view it one way. But if I'm up in Burnett County and I'm standing on a field where I want to enrich the soil so the soybeans grow better, I'm going to view it as in quite a different light. So why shouldn't the perspectives matter? That's my question.
Sure. And in this instance, I'd like to start out by saying whether the court agrees with us that it should be a layperson standard or whether the court wants to say it's a reasonable septage hauler standard or whether the court wants to go one step further and say this is a particular insured or Phil's pumping in this case standard, the analysis comes out the same. But if the standard really becomes, you're supposed to look at this from the reasonable septage handler standard or what they would understand the words to mean, then who determines what a reasonable septage hauler understands? I presume it's the court, but Are we looking at a smaller business like Phil's Pumping and what Phil's Pumping understands? Or are we looking at ABC Septage Handling Corporation?
I don't know. You're taking it to the extreme. You're taking it to the most extreme. Why couldn't we say someone in the business of using this product, and by the way, no one brought a bucket of septage to the party in case anyone was worried. Why isn't it enough to say, from the standpoint of someone who's in the business of applying septage as fertilizer?
Because I don't believe that that's the proper standard as it now
stands. Well, there you
go.
Now, see, that's what you're resting on. And instead of taking it down to, well, what does Phil's assistant think over at Phil's Pumping? You know, of course we're not going to.
So if the insurance company writes a policy, standard policy, and sells a standard policy, when it writes that standard policy, it has to think about whether it's just anybody or a layperson is going to interpret it, or it's going to be a specialized company, big company that does it, or a small company that does it occasionally, or whether it's Phil's plumber. And that requires the insurance company then maybe to write particular policies for particular businesses, doesn't it?
It does. May I answer your question?
Yes, of course.
My red light is on. And I think that also goes back to the second part, and I'm sorry I didn't get to finish, of Justice Gableman's question. And that's true, because in this case, Rural used broad language because it wanted to exclude pollution. And there are specialty pollution policies out there. In fact, we have a pollution policy that's currently in this case. Chartis is a pollution carrier, and our own insured, Phil's Pumping, went out and obtained specialty pollution coverage to cover exactly the type of damages that Rural excluded here. Now, I don't think that that's relevant unless we get down the spectrum to more of this particular insured standard, but you're right. What risks are the insurance company writing? And in this particular situation, when Rural is insuring Phil's Pumping, we're insuring them for commercial general liability risks, not pollution.
What was the substance for which the pollution insurance coverage was purchased?
Basically, the same language that's being used in the Rural policies or the policies at issue to define pollutant and bodily injury or property damage arising out of pollutant.
I thought you said that Phil's Pumping just
finished.
She's not answering my question, so I'm going to ask it differently.
We have a private.
Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
Appreciate
we're
Justice
just arguing
Rogan's
up here.
No, I'm asking. I thought you said they obtained a special insurance policy for pollution.
They did.
What was the pollution?
The pollution in this case is septage. The definition of pollutant under the Chartis policy, and that's what I was getting at before, is the same definition that's under the Rural policy. They phrase it as a pollution event.
But they say that they cover it anyway. Is that the deal? Is there a rider that says they cover it anyway?
I believe it's just a pollution policy through Chartis, not necessarily a rider. It's a specialty pollution policy.
I see. So the same definition, but what they are saying is we cover damages caused by pollution, essentially.
Oh.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank
I do have a question. If you talk in terms of the plain meaning of the insurance policy, which is the way you started, then it's everybody, lay, not lay, et cetera, which raises the question that once you say it's not plain meaning and ambiguity, then you may have a different standard. You might have the reasonable person. You might have the reasonable insured, or you might have the reasonable commercial spreader.
Right. If going through the standard, the plain and ordinary meaning is ambiguous, correct, then you resort to rules of construction, and that's really where the reasonable expectations come
that's
in.
In your view, but there may correct. Be cases that would say reasonable expectation of the insured or reasonable expectation of a particular entity comes in regardless of ambiguity.
Correct. And that's the Donaldson and Langone cases that he was referring to earlier. And as stated in the concurrence in Peace, Donaldson did not render the pollution exclusion ambiguous. The focus was on the substance at issue, and that was carbon dioxide. It wasn't on the terms of the policy. And that unique situation and that unique substance, the involuntary exhaling of carbon dioxide, human respiration, could not fairly be encompassed to fall under the pollution exclusion. There was an absurd result. So I agree, there are situations where even applying the language properly, and even in cases of unambiguity, there are situations where you get two reasonable expectations, but those situations are very unique.
Okay.
Thank you,
Counsel. Mr. Evans, representing Regent.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jeffrey Evans. I represent Regent Insurance Company. And I actually think that William Shakespeare had the answer to what some of the questions were this morning when he said that that which we call rose by any other name would smell as sweet. And I think what Bill was talking about as it applies to these cases is that whether we call a substance bat guano or septage or even cow manure, we're talking about the same thing, which is unambiguously a pollutant. And so this case really is Hirshhorn just in a different set of clothes on. And Hirshhorn reached this conclusion by applying a straightforward analysis of the policy language to construe that that bat guano was a contaminant, and it was an irritant, and it was also waste. In this case, we had the exact same thing. Septage, there's no question that septage is a contaminant, and an irritant, and a waste. It's regulated by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. In fact, I think it's listed by the DNR as a high-strength waste, and that's in the record at 136, page 6. And there's really no question here that waste in the definition means something more than something that has absolutely no use. The definition of waste includes materials to be recycled or reclaimed. And that's exactly what happened here, is that you had an insured who put a pollutant, septage, on farm fields. That pollutant was to be reclaimed, reused as fertilizer, and as it percolated through the soil, leached into the drinking water, it caused the damage that we're talking about. So from the standpoint of the insured, even if that's the standard, when the kettle septic applies this.
Isn't this a case of the poison being in the dose? In other words, an appropriate amount of this product spread in appropriate fashion is a beneficial thing to the person, to the farmer and the land. But applied in too heavy a dose, it produces too much and therefore an undesirable amount. So I don't know that that squares with your argument that this is a pollutant that by definition is applied to land. As it's applied to land properly, it's a fertilizer.
Well, I would argue that it is a pollutant that has a use in the same way that
in the proper dose.
Right. And the way here, I stop to get gas, and I put gasoline in my car, and I'm putting a pollutant into my car that's going to have beneficial use in order that I'm able to get here on time. And if I put too much, or if I was inattentive and the gas pump fell onto the ground and spilled gasoline on the ground, you would then have a pollutant that's not in the place that it's supposed to be. And that's exactly what we have here. We have a pollutant that's applied to the farm fields, and absolutely, in the correct amounts that are regulated by the DNR, it would act as a fertilizer to the benefit of the farmers. But if too much is applied, just like a gasoline overflow, then it gets into the drinking water and causes a problem that we're talking about here, which is the pollution event.
So where does it come in the definition of pollutant?
I'm sorry?
under which words in the definition of pollutant?
Contaminant, irritant. It's a, both a solid and a liquid, and it, the definition also includes waste.
Okay.
And again, there's no question that septage is referred to in the Wisconsin Administrative Code as waste. And that's probably the most colloquial use of the term that we're talking about, septage, is a waste.
Do I understand that Chartis Specialty Insurance insured Phil's pumping for specifically for pollution?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did
And I think it was a later policy period, but they had a specific policy that would insure a pollution event.
Okay. And did Kettle have any insurance for that?
That's my knowledge.
They did not.
That's correct.
But they dealt with this substance. Was there any discussion between their agents or the insurance company and Kettle? I mean,
it's not in the record, Your Honor, and it wasn't something that was dealt with in the facts and the depositions that were taken, so I don't know the answer to that question.
Would it be fair to say that they probably thought they had coverage?
No, I don't think it's fair to say that because the policy terms are unambiguous that what we're talking about is a pollutant. It's a contaminant. It's an irritant. It's a waste. Whether the insured subjectively believed that there would have been coverage or not, I would say is immaterial in the case. But again, there was no testimony one way or the other about whether they believed that they had coverage.
So they were just very careless when they bought insurance?
And any entity that is involved in handling a pollutant, like whether it's septage or gasoline, I think they would have to be aware of the fact that they are handling a substance that has the potential to cause pollution, and that they would go out and seek specific coverage for that.
Well, this sounds so elementary, but nevertheless, I ask. In order to be a pollutant, as defined under the policy, does it have to pollute?
If I understand the court's correct.
Let me be more specific. One of the definitions of pollutant is a liquid. Milk. Oh, that's a pollutant. It's a liquid. But milk doesn't pollute. The milk that I had this morning in my coffee, I drank without putting it in my coffee. Is that a pollutant under your policy? It's a liquid.
Could milk, something as innocuous or milk or water, qualify as a pollutant? I think the answer is probably yes, but this gets into the Pipefitters case and the Donaldson case, which suggested that if you look at the definition of pollution within the policy, almost any substance could be a pollutant. And so in Pipefitters, there was a discussion about, well, we need to have some limiting principle there. And what the court suggested was a common sense approach, because the court gave some good examples of if somebody slipped and fell on Drano, for example, would that be a polluting event? Mm-hmm. And I think the answer to that question would be no.
In fact, what did the court say? I just read that yesterday or today. What did the court say? Not just no, but it had to do with it has to disperse or interact. If you can't find that real quickly, that's okay, because I have it here. I just have it. It becomes a pollutant. I think maybe peace referenced that, I think, maybe. Counsel, I can find it later.
Okay.
That's fine.
Could I ask you a hypothetical?
Sure.
Your commercial liability policy, did that cover fires?
I'm sorry?
Would that cover fires? Let's suppose I have a business here. and there's a fire at the business, and the smoke from the fire damages Justice Ziegler's property. Perhaps she has some fine art in her property. She has a gallery, and the smoke from the fire and my property goes and hits her. Pollutants means blah, 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 including smoke. Are you going to invoke the pollution exclusion clause?
Yeah, in fact, there are cases out there that where it was smoke that caused damage, and the pollution exclusion would apply in that case. I mean, the smoke itself would be the pollutant as opposed to the fire. But whatever it is that produces the pollutant, if at the end of the day, if it's pollutant that's causing the damage, the pollution exclusion should apply. And that gets...
She's going to be able to sue me and I won't have any coverage?
There may be coverage under some other portions of the policy, but as far as would the pollution exclusion apply, smoke clearly is one of the specified elements of a pollutant. And this gets back to Justice Bradley's question in pipe fitters, is that, you know, every substance has the potential to pollute, and they suggested this every day. The limiting principle would be something that an everyday occurrence that's gone slightly but not surprisingly awry. And I would suggest that that's not a very workable standard. There may be a limiting principle at play here, and it would be whether the polluting substance did in fact act to create a polluting event as opposed to a pollutant that caused damage in some way other than as a pollutant. I see that my time is up. If any other questions.
I see not, counsel, so thank you. Mr. Graff, representing Hastings.
Good morning. My name is Ryan Graff from the national law firm in Manitowoc. I represent Hastings Mutual Insurance Company. Hastings insured Kettle Septic from July 13, 1999 to July 13, 2005. And 4DK Farms from April 5th, 2000 to April 5th, 2007. Hastings is asking this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision on the pollution issue, but Hastings has an alternate basis for non-coverage as found by the Court of Appeals, specifically that the plaintiff's property damage did not occur during the Hastings policy periods. Like all CGL policies, the Hastings policies here required under the initial grant of coverage that the property damage occur during the policy period. It's undisputed in this case that the plaintiff's damages did not occur till 2008. Mr. Preisler, the plaintiff, put together an affidavit saying my cows didn't get sick till 2008. His experts put together expert reports saying the damages didn't start till 2008. Mr. Preisler, because he sells milk commercially, has to get his wells tested every 2 years. So in 2002, 2004, 2006, and 2008, the beginning parts of those years, his wells were tested. They tested clean. Mr. Preisler.
Well, the you were dismissed on summary judgment in regard to the problems that everybody's arguing about here today falling outside the policy period, right?
The trial court didn't address the issue. The Court of Appeals did.
Right. Okay. So the Court of Appeals addressed it, but nobody here appeal that decision, did they?
That is correct. So the court...
Why should we deal with it? I mean, why is that an issue before this court? If nobody seemed to think the Court of Appeals got it wrong, why do we want to take it up?
Hastings doesn't think you should deal with it, but there was a reply brief filed by 4DK Farms and Kettle saying that the trial court never addressed it, so I don't know. The argument doesn't make much sense to me. Our position is you shouldn't take it up because nobody petitioned for review on that question.
Okay. Thank you.
And with that, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Kovac, representing Socorro.
Good morning, justices. May it please the court. Thank you for your time today. You've heard from a lot of attorneys, so I'm going to try to keep this brief. As you've already heard, I represent Secura, and there's already been some questions directed at the fact that Secura has somewhat of a unique position in this case. I'm going to spend my short amount of time pointing out just two reasons I think that we have somewhat unique traits in this case, and I'll invite questions, and I'll try to keep myself brief so that I can answer what seem to be some pinpoint issues for Secura. The first point I want to bring up is really the point you want to talk about today, which is pollution. And I want to actually pick up where Attorney Olson, on behalf of the Preislers, left off. The last comment he had made to you before he sat down was that these respondent insurers could make their policy definitions of pollution more clear had they added words like fertilizer in their definition. Secura has added the word fertilizer in their definition. That is one unique trait of Secura in this case. And in fact, if you look at their pollution definition, they use the word fungicides. They use the word insecticides. They use other types of substances as examples of pollutants that they don't cover, which would be something farmers would use and put on their land and or their crops to benefit their crops or their farmland. And I think, I know this court, at least certain justices on this court in the past have been concerned with not just the ambiguity or unambiguity of a policy term, but what about in context? Look at the definition in context. Well, I would like to say 2 points. First, to the extent that the appellants are arguing this is being used as a fertilizer here, that septage is being used as a fertilizer, Secura's policy definition of pollution by using the word fertilizers unambiguously excludes coverage for this loss. But the second point is, even in context, if you use an idea such as aegustum generis, where you look at the words that surround it for other examples, the references to fungicides and insecticides and herbicides, those show that the types of things that a reasonable insured in the position of these insureds would contemplate in this pollution exclusion is the same types of things farmers put on their land to benefit their land and to benefit their crops. So I think in all of those contexts, whether you want to treat this as an unambiguous reference to fertilizers or even an ambiguous one where you have to resort to a statutory or a common law rule of construction like aegustum generis, in either case, Secura's policy exclusion for pollutants excludes this loss. The other point I want to make with respect to Secura is something that the counsel off the justices off to the right of me have already pointed out, particularly Justice Gableman. What about the fact that Secura has a standalone basis for summary judgment here that was argued in the trial court but not addressed by the trial court, argued again in the Court of Appeals, unopposed in the Court of Appeals, and affirmed as a standalone basis for Secura's judgment in the Court of Appeals, and not appealed here? Why should that now come up at this Supreme Court level? Why should Secura be here defending its position when there's a standalone basis for its summary judgment that hasn't been appealed? It should be out of this case. Why should this Supreme Court be addressing the pollution exclusion issues as to Secura when it doesn't need to?
And your right here then to argue must have been granted by other defendants, giving them part of their time.
That's why
you can argue, and that's why the preceding counsel can argue, because you're arguing you really have no right to, you have no obligation to be here.
That would be somewhat of my position, yes. And that's why we had filed the motion for summary disposition, but out of respect to the court, I'm going to come and argue pollution exclusion because I think you would want to hear from me because of my unique policy. So with that being said, those are the only 2 points I wanted to make. If you do have questions, I open up the floor. The other one thought I did have that I did want to address was Justices Rogensack and Gableman had both asked questions, and I believe you did as well, Chief Justice, about this slurry tank, potentially leaking slurry tank that was owned by 4DK Farm. It's on property that's not owned by 4DK, but it's on land that they farm. And there was questions about, well, isn't there an allegation that that was leaking? And how is that different from the septage that's being intentionally applied on farmland here? The reason I want to address that point is we've raised this in our brief, but you will note there is no fact in the record, even though this matter came before the court on summary judgment, there's no fact in the record that says that that slurry tank was actually leaking.
Now,
there's an allegation.
I think opposing counsel agreed it's a fact question.
Well, it's not a fact question because it's not a fact dispute. The time to raise those fact disputes were on summary judgment.
Well, did your side say that there was no leak from the tank?
We did. We put in the deposition transcripts of Frederick Preisler, who's a plaintiff, and also their expert, Thomas Cull, both of whom said, we have no evidence of a leak. And we established our prima facie case for summary judgment on that basis. No facts were submitted saying otherwise.
Okay. Well, then if there are no facts on it, there are no facts on it. I wasn't concerned about the facts. I was concerned about the question of law.
I respect that. I just wanted to point that out in case there was confusion. And I see my time is up. Thank Unless there's anything further, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Counsel, Mr. Smise of representing Phil's Plumbing.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Jonathan Smise of Godfrey & Kahn, and I represent Phil's Plumbing and Fab, Inc., a defendant in this case and petitioner. Phil's role in this case was to provide equipment to facilitate the pumping or transfer of septage from the kettle storage areas to the Chrysler's fields for application and assist in the application of the septage on the field. So there are no issues concerning the alleged leaking of a storage tank as it relates to Phil's pumping. Phil's insurer, Rural Mutual, and the other insurers here, by virtue of their position as the drafter of the policy, they have the position and the ability to exercise expressive exactitude in crafting the terms of the policy, and as such, in crafting the exclusion. And that explains why it is we have this line of authority from Donaldson and Hirschhorn and other cases, indicating the importance of applying the reasonable person in the position of the insured in ascertaining the scope of a pollution exclusion. It only makes sense in light of the disparate position of the parties in terms of the drafting of the policy, whether or not it's a standard form created by some other institute or that drafted locally by the insurer, it's still the insurer's exclusion. The Court should have no concern about a parade of horribles of subjective arguments that somehow we're going to have to look at the individual insureds in their particular situation to the extent sort of argued by the insurers here that really it is not a subjective question. It is that of what a person in that position, a reasonable person in the position of the insured, would think concerning coverage.
Isn't it depend on what you mean position of the insured? If you mean the position of the insured because they're a commercial spreader, if you mean a position of an insured who occasionally spreads fertilizer, that's another. So when you say reasonable position, reasonable expectation of the insured, that's a standard phrase, a reasonable expectation of the person in the position of. It's a standard phrase for the objective test. You say a reasonable person in the position of this driver, is that a reasonable? Do you know what I'm saying?
I think I do, Your Honor. In this case,
what does it mean to say reasonable position of the insured here?
In this case, we have our client, Phil's Pumping and Fab, that is involved in the business of pumping septage. That is the nature of its operations. That was a fact disclosed in the application for insurance coverage and known to the insurers. So that is the position of the insured in this situation.
Are there a lot of companies like Phil's around Wisconsin?
Frankly, I'm not sure as far as the market for pumping services. I think there are there's a need for this service, and they do operate in various areas of operation. Our client operates, I think, in a multi-county area, traveling to various sites to help apply. In certain situations, for example, using long tubing where it's necessary maybe to run a tube under a culvert, under a road to apply septage to an adjoining field. That's the sort of operation he engages in.
I'm sorry, Justice.
I'm not sure I'm getting the big picture here. There are going to be consequences whether you win or whether you lose, it seems to me. And I don't think I quite get what the history has been on this sort of litigation, what the law is in other states, what the consequences are one way or the other. What is the law in other states on this?
Your Honor, I think as Mr. Mangini indicated, it is varied. in other states. And there are cases in which courts have looked at the scope of a pollution exclusion clause involving other materials, and they've come out in various holdings, some holding them to be within and some without the scope of the clause. I would just remind the court, as Mr. McGinney did, that none of these states, to at least Phil Pumping's knowledge, have applied and adopted this formulation that I think is essential to understanding this case, that this is an ordinary activity gone slightly but not surprisingly awry. None of them have applied that limiting principle, which makes perfect sense given the fact that the pollution exclusion clause, at least in Wisconsin, is applied outside of industrial sort of pollution settings. So I think it makes it difficult to give a concise synopsis of all the various holdings of different courts around the country.
I have a short but prosaic question. You, at the beginning of your presentation, you indicated that Phil's Pumping supplied the equipment to allow the injection of the septage into the land. My recollection from the briefs, just so I'm not wondering about it later, my recollection from the briefs is they actually performed the injection as well.
That is correct.
Okay. Well, I told you it was short, and I told you it was prosaic.
My time's up.
Your time is up, and you were in rebuttal, Mrs. Smyth, so thank you. I want to thank all of these attorneys, almost too numerous to mention, for their briefs and for their arguments today on a case that raises the definition of pollution, which has come up in other cases recently, and a different situation. So thank you for your help in this case, and we will be hearing the Wilson case next, which is also a pollution exception case in a different fact situation. So that concludes the hearing in 2012 AP 2521, Chrysler versus Kettle Septic Services. We will take a short break and be back after a very brief 5-7 minute recess to hear the Wilson case.